I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geis are here with me. And now Colin Jeffrey, our news director, joins me for the showbiz segment of the show and his alter ego, Showbiz Boy. An alter ego, by the way, that has its own email address, correct?
Yes. Yes. Showbizboy. 550@gmail.com.
If you have any questions about movies or any of that, you can email Colin about that. So today we have two movies that are opening up. One is called Central Intelligence with The Rock and Kevin Hart. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it. Did you?
No.
All right, that's our review of Central Intelligence starring Dwayne Johnson and Kevin Hart.
Now, I was going to see it last week, but I didn't know it wasn't open.
Nice Guys.
Don't do that story again,
not
please.
Again, please.
I went to see Nice Guys, and I saw Russell Crowe. I said, well, wait, I thought The Rock was in this thing. Nope, wrong movie.
Now, what did you think of Nice Guys?
It was okay. I mean, it was...
Okay, in Dan Russell, Strauss speak, that
is a
was
7.5 right there. He gives it a 7.
No. When he says it's okay,
that's 3 out of 10.
That's a 3 out of 10.
Yeah. I just figured 7 was his
Dan
zero.
Dan loves every movie he goes to, so if he says it was just okay, that's terrible.
There were some funny moments in it, and I'm with you about Russell Crowe with that accent or whatever the heck he was trying to do.
Yeah.
Makes sense. I didn't know what he was trying to do.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense at all.
No.
But the other movie that's opening up today...
Well, I will say this about Central Intelligence. If you liked... I hope it's more like Ride Along the original than Ride Along 2, because Ride Along is a pleasant surprise with Ice Cube and Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
Like, if you haven't seen that, it's worth the rental. It's funny. You'll laugh. Ride Along 2, don't watch. It's not worth the rental.
Okay.
So if it's like Ride Along, I mean, Kevin Hart has it in him to make these understated, funny movies.
His movies make a lot of money. I mean, really, say what you want about his ability.
So do Tyler Perry's, but they're garbage.
I know. But that's why he keeps getting these roles, because he's a bankable star in Hollywood.
Nicholas Sparks Productions shut down this week. After 11 novels turned into movies, Nicholas Spark Productions is done.
You mean the guy who made The Notebook
and all the other junk?
Forced tens of thousands of American men to be dragged to the movies to see things that they did not want to see by their wives who want to get the romance that they can't get in real life on screen for based on a Nicholas Sparks novel?
Yeah, and Letters Home and Tear-Stained Rose Petals and, Puppies. Yeah, I don't know. They're all... awful. So I don't know if they're not going to make any more of his movies, but...
All right, let me ask you this. Which of these is more likely to make you not go to a movie? Mm-hmm. A, based on a novel by Nicholas Sparks.
Mm-hmm.
Or B, based on a novel by Jane Austen.
Oh, the first one. Jane Austen is a great writer.
I'm not going to either.
I'm not going to either one because it's based on a novel.
That was not an option.
Well, no, The Martian was
ABC,
based on a novel.
I chose D.
Right. Yeah. The movie that we both did see that is opening this week is called Finding Dory, and it actually opened last night. I know this because I didn't get to go to the press screening because I was out of town. My wife and I went from the airport directly to the movie theater last night to see the first screening of this at 7 o'clock, and we were part of the group of Americans who helped it become the biggest opening for a Thursday night for an animated movie in history.
Yes.
History?
Not by a small amount.
Made $9.2 million last night.
That's starting at essentially 7 p.m., and I can't imagine there were huge midnight lines.
No.
So this is, you're talking movies like 7 and 9:15.
Yeah. Something like that. So what did you think of it? It's the new one from Pixar, and it's a sequel to Finding Nemo.
So Finding Nemo, 2003, Finding Dory, 2016. This movie takes place 1 year after the events of Finding Nemo, but it starts off much earlier than that. This, we actually see young Dory, and if you're having difficulty placing the name, she's the blue one, voiced by Ellen DeGeneres. We actually see her as a child, and we learn that she's always had this short-term memory loss problem. She's never been able to remember things quickly. She forgets them. And so we see her parents actually interacting with her and coming up with fun ways to sort of bring her up. And then she is separated from her parents. And what we find out is from the time she was separated until Finding Nemo begins, we see a little interlude of these cuts where she's looking for her parents and forgetting more and more until she bumps into Marlin, voiced by Albert Brooks again, at the beginning of Finding Nemo and says, I'm looking for my son, and she has completely forgotten that she has a family. So now flash forward 1 year after the events in Finding Nemo, and she has a bolt of lightning moment and is like, I have a family and recalls a vision of her parents. I have to find them. So now they have to go from one side of the ocean to the other because they're in California is the last place she remembers her family, she finds out. So this is where they hop on with the turtles. We get to see a friend, the sea turtles.
I love the turtles.
Exactly. Yeah. And I did too. But this is where my issues started with this movie. I don't have a lot, but they were all in the beginning. Finding Nemo was, it felt natural. You have a father who loses his wife and all of his eggs, save one, at the beginning of the movie. So all he has left is this one egg who turns into Nemo, is hatched into Nemo, who's injured. And he is overprotective. And Nemo hits an age, as kids do, and becomes rebellious and wants to push the boundaries. And during this, he gets captured and Marlin has to get Dory and they got to go find Nemo. That is a perfectly natural story. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
This feels so forced that it's like, oh, we've got to have a flashback to explain Dory because we aren't quite certain who she was. And then she inexplicably, I mean, she bumps her head and has a vision of her parents. And that's the cause of this movie. That's nonsense. I don't like the premise.
However, there's always a however in life.
It makes you forget that by the end. It feels like a Pixar movie by the end. Mm-hmm. You're gonna
not
be,
even by the end, by about a half hour in.
Yeah, they get through, okay, we've seen this guy, okay, we've replaced the bad guy with this other bad guy, we've done all these things, and then it hits its stride, and you're right, it's probably about 30 or 40 minutes into the movie, and that's when we get what I think is probably one of Pixar's best recurring gags, is the voice of a famous actress is used in this movie so well that the kids are like, I don't get it, this is just for the adults.
Yes.
This is one of these just for the adults Pixar jokes that they do so well.
Yes.
And you're going to laugh, I think, more and more each time it pops up.
Will you know?
Oh, yes.
Who this actress
is? She says her name.
Okay.
It saves you.
No.
It saves you the wonder. And
we really have to try not to give things away in this movie, because there are moments in there where you go, that's really clever.
Yes.
I'm glad I didn't know that was coming.
Exactly.
And by the way, I want to stop right now and say, don't watch the trailer for this movie.
No, don't at all.
This is a movie, particularly if you're going to take your kids, don't show them the trailer on your computer and say, kids, do you want to go see this? Don't do that. Just take them.
Yes.
Because there are things that are in the trailer that will be ruined, will ruin the movie for you, because they should come up as nice little unexpected surprises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They absolutely should. And Pixar typically does a good job. I don't know quite why. And I think this is 13 years from its original.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long gap.
Mm-hmm.
It's so long that there's a new voice actor for Nemo because the kid
grew up.
He was 13 years older and can't sound like little Nemo anymore.
Yeah.
It's neither here nor there. But where the movie really hits its stride is when she arrives at a water park. Not a water park with slides, but a marine animal sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
Yeah.
An aquarium.
Marine Life Institute.
Yes. And this is where we meet sort of the rest of our characters, and this is what Pixar does better than anyone. Every supporting character does not feel overused in this. You're going to love Hank the Octopus, voiced by Ed O'Neill from Married with Children.
Yep.
Septopus. Right. That's how I gathered that in his interview on Ellen.
Yeah.
He's sprinkled in the right amount. It doesn't become just two people. Destiny, voiced by Caitlin Olsen from Sunny in Philadelphia. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh.
There's a great bonding moment between them. Ty Burrell plays a beluga whale they just all fit in so nicely, and they complement the main character so well.
Listen to the rest of the voice cast in this. Diane Keaton and Eugene Levy play Dory's parents.
Yes.
Idris Elba, Kate McKinnon, Bill Hader, Stephen Root, Allison Janney, Brad Garrett, Willem Dafoe, Austin Pendleton, and of course John Ratzenberger, who by federal law must be in every Pixar movie.
Oh, yeah,
as far as I could tell, he only had one line.
Yes,
in there.
I only caught one line. So yeah, but oh my gosh,
do they take less money because it's just a voiceover role?
I think they have to.
I mean, they have to with these because you could never afford a budget for all these people,
well,
right?
Well, and some of them.
I mean, it's going to make a bunch of money, but the kids don't know who these voices are. It's mostly for the adults, right?
It's a very important point because, you know, having well-known stars, you know, like in Toy Story, having Tom Hanks and
Tim Allen
doing Woody and Buzz, that really helped that movie. And having Don Rickles as one of your people in there, or John Ratzenberger, those people are all very good. I'm not sure that you needed all of the people I just mentioned when there are hundreds of really talented voice actors in Hollywood who are standing on the sidelines going, "Hello, I need work. I need to make some money.
I could mimic that celebrity's voice for you for a tenth of that.
Or create a different voice for you. And by the way, I need to make money so I can get my SAG-AFTRA insurance. Veda Allison Janney doesn't have to worry about that. She has a TV show.
Yes.
I need a gig.
Oh, yeah.
I've always questioned that. Why
I think it's a vanity project anymore. Because I think they want to show that they can do it. And in a few weeks here, we will have a review of a movie called The Secret Lives of Pets. And that has, headlining it, Louis C.K., Kevin Hart, a handful of... But these are people who've never done voice acting in a major role.
That.
They've done these smaller things. So this is a way for them to say, you know what, I can actually voice act. I mean, look what it did for Bradley Cooper. His highest paid movie recently wasn't anything he won an Oscar for. It was Guardians of the Galaxy playing a raccoon.
Mm-hmm.
And he's back again and is going to make buckets of money. Like, there's serious money in these things because they make a lot of money.
When you're making a list of Eddie Murphy movies?
Yeah. Shrek is near the top.
Yeah.
Donkey.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it may not be considered as great as, you know, Trading Places or Beverly Hills Cop 3. Or 48 Hours. Beverly Hills Cop 3. But the Shrek movies are what kind of reinvigorated his career. But again, that's at the top of the line of the movie.
Yeah.
Then you get down to the ones where, you know, some of those other actors are in there. And I think you could probably just have used very talented voice actors, and there are plenty of them in Hollywood. Now,
I think some of these people, like these big actors that want to get involved with this Finding Dory, want to be involved with a big, huge movie.
But we had the same thing just a few weeks ago when we talked about The Jungle Book. You know, does Scarlett Johansson, does her career need her to be the voice of Ka, the snake in there? No. She's very, very good at it. Could some actress you've never heard of have been very good at that? Absolutely.
But she probably got that because of the amazing job she did in Her, opposite Joaquin Phoenix, where she played the operating system.
Yes.
She's, it turns out, like, might actually be a better voice actress than she is real actual actress. Like, she's that good at it, I think.
Okay. But in many of these big animated movies, it's big stars, not just at the top line, but several levels down. And that's what's impressive. The thing about this is a Pixar movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the good fortune of having been written by a guy by the name of Andrew Stanton, who has really been the workhorse for Pixar. Just to give you an idea what this guy has done at Pixar, he's the guy who started the whole thing with Toy Story, and then wrote A Bug's Life, and then wrote Monsters, Inc., and then wrote Finding Nemo, and then wrote WALL-E, and then wrote Toy Story 2, and then wrote Toy Story 3.
Wow.
I think you could argue this man has single-handedly written more great animated movies than anybody in history.
Yeah. Just about. Yeah, I mean, those are all... Yeah.
And the thing
I
with
don't have
him
a complaint
is,
about it.
And the thing with him is all of those have good stories. Now, I agree with you that this one takes a while to get going. But the middle part of it, I have a little problem with the end
of
the movie, which we'll get, we'll get to that in just a second. But the middle part of it, where all these characters, the Marine Life Aquarium, whatever it's called, where they're being introduced, and the beauty of Pixar's animation.
Oh, yeah.
I remember when the first Finding Nemo came out.
How amazing.
The underwater digital camera
animation
was stunning. And in this one, they take it to a different level. But again, it's the story that drives this thing forward. As great as the animation is, it's the story that drives it forward. And that middle part, maybe the middle 70% of the movie, is really, really good. And, you know, Ellen DeGeneres' Dory is a damaged fish. I mean, she's got short-term memory. And maybe there are lessons to be learned here about people who have developmental problems and that sort of stuff. I'm sure there will be articles written about how important that is to the developmentally disabled community, et cetera. but it's the characters and the closeness that they have and the emotion that Andrew Stanton puts into his screenplay for these anthropomorphized fish mm-hmm. that really makes it pay off.
Yeah.
I do want to say one thing that I did not like towards the end of the movie. And I'm not giving anything away here, yeah. but I'm just going to say, because you've seen Colin, you'll know what I'm talking about. There's a character who drives a truck.
Yes.
A character from the sea drives a truck
yeah.
in this movie. I'm not going to say which one or how it gets there or how the other characters also end up in a truck.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where they got me off the track.
Yeah.
Because all I can think to myself is, oh, come on. I was willing to go along with all the other silliness that took place in the sea and through pipes and all the rest of the stuff. You know, just like in the first one, when Nemo ends up, is it Nemo or Dory who ends up in the aquarium in the dentist's office in the original one?
I think Nemo.
Yeah. It's Nemo who goes in there.
Along with Scar and...
Yeah. I'm completely willing to buy that sort of stuff. Those circumstances, it's stretching it, but it's still believable.
Mm-hmm.
The truck in this, right off the page.
And that I think leads into this is so my two main critiques about this are really the beginning and then something that's pervasive throughout. I talk a lot when I go to see an animated movie or a kids movie, who does it appeal to?
Mm-hmm.
And it typically appeals to everyone tries to follow the formula of let's hit this age demographic and then parents because they're going to have to sit through it.
Yeah.
Pixar is really good at, but what they tried to do in this, more so than any other movie I can think that they've done, is they tried to hit too many demographics. So I was with my daughter who brought a friend, so I had a 4 and 5 year old sitting next to me. There were things they laughed at, they loved. There were things that were just a bit over their heads, I could tell. So I'd say they're jokes aimed at like the 8 to 10 year olds. Then there were jokes that were like squarely aimed at what I felt were like teens. And this, they didn't even catch, but as an adult, I'm like, oh, that's a little juvenile. They tried too many, like, qualities of jokes, so kids are going to miss out or be bored, possibly. I don't think they will, but it's odd because this was the widest variety. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah,
that
I know what you're talking about.
They tried to hit too many demographics, yeah. And the ending, I think, illustrated that because they went for something that's madcap, like, oh, wow, the 5-year-olds, I can tell you, the two girls sitting next to me, were
hysterical,
laughing
right?
their pigtails out. Yeah. They thought it was the greatest thing ever. They yeah. loved it. They were
absolutely
losing their minds.
And I could see how it would work for kids.
Yes.
I just don't think that part of the movie works on an adult level.
No. And you said animation. This was my favorite Pixar short ever. This was the one.
The one that came on before yes. this. It's called Piper.
Piper. You want to talk about animation. The water in this that they is...
I thought it was real.
It's
about a little baby sandpiper
yes.
learning to be able to deal with living at the ocean, and the waves are coming in, and then the waves recede, and the bubbles tell them yeah. where there's some food to get under the sand, and the foam.
The foam, the everything. The feathers
so
on the birds.
So realistic.
Yes, it was cute. It's another one they do. Not a word is said. You don't need words to understand what's going on and what's happening.
Yeah.
And they're just really good at telling stories.
Yeah, I agree. This is absolutely one of the best Pixar shorts
yes.
in many, many years. What do you give Finding Dory overall?
I give it a really solid 7 out of 10.
Okay.
Like, it's a good movie.
Yep. I give it a 7.5, so we're right in the same ballpark. I do want to say this. If you take your kids, maybe the two girls you were with were a little bit bored at times, but the movie's only an hour 40, hour 45.
Oh, it's perfect length.
It's the perfect length for a movie. You don't walk out of there thinking, oh, that was too long. I will say this, though. Stay through the credits.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the first part of the credits where things are happening. It's really important not to give this away.
Yes.
But there are things happening at the beginning of the credits, and then there's a long scroll because it takes hundreds and hundreds. I'm always shocked at how many people it takes to make a great computer-generated animated movie, mm-hmm. especially the people at Pixar. There are things going by there where I turn to my mind and go, what does that person do? I have no idea what that job title even means. And there are hundreds of these people rolling by. Stay through that. Stay till the end.
Yes.
You want to see every little bit of this before the lights come up and you can go home.
Yes. It's worth the extra 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You've just sat down for the time. You can watch it. Money-wise, I wanted to talk about this because it's in rarefied air here. You mentioned it hit the Thursday record, $9.2 million.
Yeah.
Previous record was just over $6 million, so it did about 50% more than any movie's ever done on a Thursday night. The records it has to look for are 110 million, which is Toy Story 3.
Okay.
And 121 million for an opening weekend, which is Shrek the Third, which is a garbage movie.
Yep.
I'm sorry to say. If you like it, I'm sorry. It's a garbage movie.
Yep.
This is going to break it. This is going to do it. I think this is the movie that's going to do it. Not necessarily that it's the best that Pixar has ever done. I think Inside Out was great, but this has everything rolling for it. The merchandising, the parents who may have seen this as a teenager now have kids that they can take to see this
movie.
Absolutely right. It's got this weird cultural intersection that it's going to hit a lot of people. I wouldn't be shocked to see this do 130 million this weekend. My guess is 127 to beat it, but okay. 130 at the outside.
All right, Showbiz Boys on the record.
It might crush that even.
$127 million prediction for this weekend.
I think he's right. People have been waiting for this to come out.
And there hasn't been a good kids movie.
No.
The last really good
Jungle Book.
But you couldn't take a six-year-old to that. They'd be crying in bed for the next month.
You're absolutely right.
This has got everyone. If you've got a kid, go see this movie this weekend. And it's really good in 3D. My daughter and her friend both reached out to grab bubbles at one point, which is just about the cutest thing as a parent sitting next to her, and she's...
You know how I feel about 3D.
Yes.
That it's unnecessary technology for 99.9% of the movies that are made in 3D. Mm-hmm. This is not one of them.
No, it's gorgeous.
We saw this in 3D last night. We actually saw it in IMAX 3D.
Oh, my gosh.
Because that was the 7 o'clock show that we could get into last night. And $13 for a movie was just, well, really? I'm telling you, catch this one in 3D if you can, because again, it's the Pixar people and they know what they're doing. They know story, they know animation, they know how to make good movies.
Yeah,
not a great movie, but a good movie and worth your while. Now, before we go and check with Tim and then come back with some other showbiz stuff, while we're speaking of box office, did you know that there was a movie that came out this year called Misconduct, starring Al Pacino and Anthony Hopkins? It came out earlier this year, I think in February. It cost $11 million to make. It brought in its opening weekend, $15,000.
Oh, wow.
$11 million movie, $15,000.
Al Pacino and who?
Anthony Hopkins. Just a couple.
And Josh.
Be award winners.
And Josh Duhamel and Julia Stiles. It's not a horrible cast, but it's a horrible movie. One critic in Britain said it's the worst movie they've ever made. And another said it should be screened in film schools as a textbook example of how not to make a movie.
Oh, wow.
I mention this because this movie just opened in England this weekend. I want you to guess. It made $15,000 in its opening weekend in America. How much do you think it made across all of the UK last weekend?
$980.
Oh, my goodness.
I'll say $10,000.
Yeah, I was going to say like...
$141.
$141.
It was shown in five theaters. They figured out that's less than $30 a movie house. And considering it was being shown a couple of times at each one, they think that's less than three people in each theater showings.
How can that be? Because when you see that, is the word out that this is just a horrible movie?
I've never heard of it. And
I haven't either.
But how does the word get out that fast that everybody decides, I'm not going to that?
Yeah.
Here's the weird part of this story. It also opened in South Korea this weekend. Guess how much it made in South Korea. Again, 141 in Britain, 15,000 in the United States. How much did it make in South Korea?
45,000.
Higher?
Higher?
Yes.
Oh, 100,000.
Higher?
Whoa.
Ian?
250.
$900,000.
Does it take place in South Korea?
No, it does not.
So it's like Dan, is everyone there like, I was an extra in the movie.
I read an article where they interviewed all sorts of experts on film distribution. They've never seen anything like this.
Wow.
Although there are some movies that come out in America and bomb that are real action movies that don't do well here, that once they get overseas, and particularly to China, they love that kind of stuff, and it does huge box office there. Maybe this is the same kind of effect, but this is not a big action movie. This is Al Pacino and Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, wow.
$141. Do you realize that the entire tape
that was the subtitle
Al Pacino and Korean
that was dubbed in? Okay,
yeah. Do you realize the entire weekend take for an Al Pacino Anthony Hopkins movie in England would not get you a ticket to Hamilton on Broadway?
Man, oh man,
Al Pacino-san.
More in a moment here on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. Here's Bad Company, who will be out at Riverport tomorrow night with Joe Walsh. Pretty good double bill. I'm going to head over there. Looking forward to seeing that show. I'm hoping they don't do what's become a growing trend in the entertainment business, the live concert business, which is no phones allowed in the show. Although the more I think about it, the more I like the idea of this rule.
Mm-hmm.
This rule actually has been going on for a couple of years, and there's a company called Yonder, Y-O-N-D-R, because, you know, you can't have E-R in any high-tech app.
Yeah. You have to miss vowels.
You got to take the E out of there. So it's called Yonder, and it's a pouch that they have where you get to the venue, and some artists like Alicia Keys and the Lumineers, Louis C.K., Dave Chappelle, many others have started using this over the last year or so. When you get to the venue, they tell you it's a phone-free event. And they give you this gray, rubbery pouch. Your phone goes in there, and then they have a lock for it. You then keep the pouch, so you don't have to give up your phone. And then go back to them later, hey, I can't find my phone, or I can't believe you lost my phone. It doesn't go into a lock or anything. You keep the pouch with you, but it's to prevent you from video or audio recording the event that you're paying to see. And this the article I read about it, some people are very upset about it, saying, I want to share the concert with my friends who can't get in there, which is exactly what the artists don't want you to do.
Yeah.
Although I will tell you, it's nice if I hear about something that happens at a concert to be able to go on to YouTube, and there's always somebody who has use their phone to capture that moment.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, when I'm at the show, there's nothing more annoying to me than the person in front of me who has a phone, or even worse, a tablet, like an iPad, and they're holding it up.
Right.
So instead of seeing the concert on this 100-foot-wide stage, I'm now watching it on a 6-inch-wide screen that I have to look around if I want to see the show that I paid to see.
Yeah. I bought this plate at a buffet. I just want to share the food with the people not in here. Isn't that okay?
Yes, I can.
It's all you can eat, right?
I'm going to have a full meal, but then I'm going to load my pockets and take all that food home for my friends.
My friends couldn't get in.
Yeah, one 29-year-old woman said, I want to share this with my friends who can't get in, and besides, I need a flashlight. Well, then bring a flashlight. I know you have one on your phone. Fine.
Hold on. How are you watching a concert that a flashlight is necessary?
I don't understand.
It involves your ears. Like, there's not a whole lot else you need.
One guy, 24-year-old guy, says, in this day and age, my phone is how I keep my memory. Chris Brown, Jason Derulo, I have their footage on my phone. If you don't want your music heard, then don't perform it. That person should never be allowed to go to another concert for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
You know what? That's a generation of people who have grown up expecting it all to be free.
Yeah.
Everything they want, they can go online and they can find it for free. Music, videos, TV. You know, they want free Wi-Fi wherever they go, etc. And by the way, I'm with you. I enjoy all that free stuff, too. But when you go to see somebody perform it, somebody has to pay for that performance.
Yeah.
And you're the one who has coughed up the dollars for you to see the show. Not for all of your friends to see the show and share it with you. There's also another word in here called memory, which you're supposed to keep inside your head.
Mm-hmm.
Not just on the electronic device or the website or the cloud. So I'm with these people. And if they did have them tomorrow night at Riverport, I would be a little PO'd because I wouldn't put my phone in the pouch. I would walk back to my car and leave it there.
I like having the phone because if you know somebody else there, they're texting you going, where are you? Or let's meet somewhere, or let's do
whatever. Oh, yeah. It was so hard in the old days when you would actually wander around Riverport all night long. Dan!
I know.
Dan!
Yeah.
That's Jenkins. He never knows where Dylan is.
I think people found one another at Woodstock. I think we can handle Riverport. Or they just didn't care at Woodstock. They're just like, man.
And taking pictures.
Or like, you know what? Pictures. No, here's a more important thing. Maybe before you go to Riverport or Scottrade or any place else, a Cardinals game, for instance, you tell people, I'm going to be in section 115. That's where I'll meet you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I always love when you think you know someone at a Cardinals game, and you're like, oh, stand up and wave. I'm going to pick you out of these other 40,000 people here.
Yeah.
Well, I always got screwed up because they always said, meet me at Musial Statue. I'll be the one wearing red. I'd never find anybody.
After tonight, I'll be the one in the Colton Wong jersey. do you know tonight's the Colton Wong jersey giveaway night?
Yeah.
And they brought him back up yesterday just so he could be on the team when they have this.
I know.
And what do they get? They wave him again tomorrow? Is that how that works?
No, in all fairness, he went down to Memphis and hit 4 home runs this week. So
he may be out of his slump.
It may have been performance related, not necessarily because they were giving away his jersey tonight.
It's not because that we're also planning in August a Colton Wong bobblehead night that he'll definitely be on the team for. We don't have any of that going on. Other showbiz stuff I want to mention here. A guy by the name of Ty Burr is the movie reviewer and showbiz writer for the Boston Globe. And he says, look, I know we've had a terrible week. We had the people who died in Orlando just because they were gay. We had the alligator at Disney World that killed the 2-year-old child. And we've had bad things going on in the showbiz world, too. I mean, just in the last few months, we've lost Muhammad Ali and David Bowie and Prince. He says, maybe we should take a moment to start thinking about the people we still have with us a little bit more. He says, I was reminded of this while watching the Tony Awards last Sunday night and seeing Angela Lansbury and James Earl Jones as presenters. She's 90, he's 85.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
We should be happy that we still have them around. Even in the rock and roll world, we still have Chuck Berry, Little Richard, Fats Domino, and Jerry Lee Lewis. The guys who invented rock and roll are still alive. I mentioned Bad Company and Joe Walsh. They're not kids. Paul Simon is 75. He was at the Fox on Sunday. Paul McCartney's going to be at Bush Stadium.
He turned 74 today.
You got all of these people.
Wow.
And then he points out, how about Olivia de Havilland, who was Melanie in Gone with the Wind?
Oh, my gosh.
She's 100 years old, not in the greatest of health, but she's still around. Kirk Douglas, 99 years old, still writing books and a blog for the Huffington Post.
Wow.
June Foray, who is the voice of Rocky in the Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons and probably has done more animation voice work than any female performer in history. She's around 98 years old. She got a special Emmy Award a year or two ago.
Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat.
That's her.
That's him. That's the guy.
That's Bullwinkle.
Yeah.
Nothing up my sleeve.
That's you doing June Foray's voice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Zsa Zsa Gabor, 99, still around. Carol Channing, 95, still around. How about these people from the Dick Van Dyke Show? Carl Reiner, the creator, 94. Rose Marie, 92. Dick Van Dyke, 90.
Wow.
Whose actual name is Penis Van Lesbian.
Correct.
Yeah.
Betty White, 94. Cicely Tyson, 91. Eva Marie Saint, 91 years old. They're all still around.
Hey, and somebody just died. Millie, the guy, Jerry's wife next door.
And Morgan Gilbert was her name.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
She was just the next door neighbor, Millie.
James Earl Jones should record his own eulogy. Someone else should write it. He should record it.
No,
who's going to speak at his?
I'll tell you exactly who will do it. Morgan Freeman.
Okay, there you go. Okay, that's the only other
official African-American narrator of our lives. And while we're speaking of this, happy birthday to my mom, who tomorrow turns 92 years old.
Wow.
And is still living alone and is still with us, and we're happy about that. That's our showbiz stuff for this week. Colin will be here with the news in just a few minutes, and in the next hour, I'll have the Harris Challenge and Knuckleheads in the News, all on the Big 550 KTRS.